everybody. This is Charles with the Barbershop Group Podcast. I hope everybody's having a beautiful day today. I wanted to get the opportunity to talk to you guys about an aspect of therapy and an aspect of our culture that is often negated. I know that a lot of individuals are struggling to come to terms with this part of life. Some of you guys out there, although you may be involved in conversations about different types of masculinity or masculinities and identity and things like that, you may not jump deep into the pool regarding different groups of men. And as you know, one of the things that I like to do is I like to push the envelope. I like to get you guys to think about things in a way that you may not have thought about those things before. And today we're going to go there. And one of the things that I know exists today, and it's not very popular for us to talk about, is that although you've got the Me Too movement and you've got some force going behind that, there's also some opposition to it. And I also know that in addition to the opposition from men or by men to the Me Too movement, there's also some opposition on the part of heterosexual men in terms of having a conversation with men in the gay community. Yes, I know this to be true. I see the comments on Facebook. I travel around to churches. I speak with people in mosques. So I know that there are these fears, and we're just going to talk about those things today. We're going to talk about the mental health implications of some of those fears and our inability to explore masculine identity. So today, guys, I have Justin Smith with us, and we will spend probably about 30 minutes just kind of chopping it up, talking about some things that he's working on in the community. I don't like to say in his community, but for some of you guys, I guess I will say his community. And he'll kind of, you know, take the lid off the trash can or take the scales off of our eyes and educate us a little bit. Justin Smith is the founder of the Queer Center in Houston. He's a therapist that specializes in providing counseling services for gay men and the queer community. His work as a therapist, trainer, consultant, advocate, and educator, and researcher are all connected to his desire to support and make a positive impact on the mental health of the queer community. Justin is he's a licensed professional counselor, again, in Texas. He graduated from Wright State with a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology and a master's from Wright State as well. And Justin, if I'm not mistaken, I think that you're a doctoral student now. Is that right?
I am. I am finished with coursework, and I'm just writing that small book report called dissertation.
Yes, that small book report. Right. Well, you know what, man? I'm glad that you were able to join us today to speak to us about some of the issues. And as you heard me say, you know, man, I know that there are a lot of guys who don't really feel comfortable. Well, number one, men don't feel comfortable talking about mental health, right? Right. But I also know that a lot of men, especially straight men, don't feel comfortable, making space for gay men who might be struggling with mental health. Mm-hmm. And I know that working in addictions, it's no thing at all to run into a guy who is gay who is a recovering addict. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not like, whoa, it's real for everybody. It's real. And so, I wanted to get some of your input today so that our listeners could, you know, just get the opportunity to expand some of the things that they may be considering. I know that in the hetero world, as I said, with there being this kind of like maybe stigma about mental health, if there is a stigma for men about mental health in the hetero world, does this stigma also exist with gay men, and how are you addressing it?
There's definitely a stigma when it comes to mental health with gay men. I think they have all the same worries as straight men do about mental health. There's the idea that, you know, going to a counselor means you're crazy. It means that you're weak to go to a counselor for help. But I think also with gay men specifically, they've had experience in the past where maybe a counselor didn't accept them. A counselor was trying to redirect their life. Mm-hmm. And then we've had in the past, of course, where counseling was used as a tool to change people's sexual orientation. Conversion therapy. Right. And so it's still trying to break that stigma away from mental health and therapy when it comes to specifically gay men, and what does it mean for a gay man to go to therapy, and what are the benefits of going to therapy?
Right.
You know, just trying to make it clear to them on, you know, what are the issues that you can come to therapy for, how it can help them, and what that process may look like, and really making them feel safe that therapy can be a safe space for them to explore the surface things. But also, once you get in there, you start to realize, oh, it's a lot deeper than just the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to backtrack a little bit because you threw out a lot there, but, you know, you kind of indicated something about biases, you know, so when we're talking about biases, you mentioned change therapy.
Yes.
And that's something I know that a lot of states are asking therapists and clinicians to do away with, you know, so this idea that a gay man walks into a therapist's office, and instead of them addressing, say, for instance, addiction or anxiety or depression, they're looking at, well, let's talk about your sexuality and what makes you think you're gay. I don't know if it was the state of Washington that recently did away with that. Within the last 2 weeks, I saw an article about that. So it's amazing to me that that's actually a real thing.
it amazes me too, and just to see, I think we get so like, oh, 2018, we kind of think that everything's kind of taken care of, and you start to dig a little deeper and realize, no, it's not, we still got work to do.
we
can get married, but there's still work to do.
Right It's I understand, you know, from the I guess from a religious standpoint, if somebody has a different opinion or perspective of gay life, from that standpoint, I'm able to give them room to do that. But in terms of mental health and getting access to health care, you know, it's like, well, wait a minute, man, what are we talking about right now?
Yeah, you got to be able to separate the two.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, again, in keeping with biases, what are some of the biases that you think hetero men or hetero therapists may be displaying towards gay clients? Have you ever heard anything about that?
Well, just probably like 2 weeks ago, I think me opening my private practice in March and really kind of going out doing some things on my own outside of my group practice, I'm starting to be more involved with like the intakes and people get calling for services. Okay. And I had a gentleman, and he called me to start counseling. And he asked me a question. He was like, do you accept HIV positive clients? And I was actually, I had the same face. I was like taken aback. Like, of course I do. But it kind of, then reflecting on it, I said that made me kind of sad, because if he's asking that question, who knows the type of experience that he's had trying to get services. So he may have experienced people who have deterred him from coming, or maybe were blatant with rejection.
Yeah.
But so it makes it kind of made me more aware of like, okay, these are real things that people are going through trying to get a therapist in their life.
Right. Yeah, no, that's amazing that you had someone ask you that. I mean, that definitely came from an experience that they had in the past. And just to think that somebody's asking a mental health therapist, hey, will you see me if I'm HIV positive? That's wow. I don't even know what to say, man. That's just mind boggling.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving along, we talk about some of the different things that men face. I know that straight men, that hetero men, quietly deal with body image issues, and they don't really say outwardly, hey, I've got this body image issue. But guys, so you all know, whether you're a college age student or if you're in your 40s, when you go to the gym and you're standing there looking in the mirror and you're trying to get your pecs to look a certain way, or you're trying to get your tries to look a certain way, the next guy, you're talking about what are really body image issues. It doesn't mean that you are so fixated on your body that, you know, you're in an unhealthy space, but it means that, you know, you want to improve certain aspects of yourself.
Right.
And those are still body image issues. Those are body image concerns. So, Justin, do you find that gay men have the same issue?
I think it's even exemplified in the gay community, especially with gay men.
Yeah.
Because of so much, the only images that are put out in the gay community around gay men are the men that are really, really muscular and the six packs. And maybe they're in sexy underwear and they're half naked, but they're all like being in the gym 6 days a week. And so that that's all you see on, whether it be party flyers, whether it be promotions, different events. That's what you see a lot of times in the gay community, of the visuals of men. You don't get to see everyday men who maybe don't have the six packs.
Right.
I think it's just exemplified with gay men, because it's like, oh, I don't have that. What does that mean? they may be already operating from a place of rejection and not acceptance. And so then they're wondering, okay, do I need to get that to have some sort of respect, or someone look at me, or someone accept me? Maybe someone to validate me and even, you know, see me. And so I think it's a little harder, because that's the only image that's seen around the gay community when it comes to gay men.
That's interesting that you mentioned that. I can recall going to we were out shopping, and we had a friend coming to visit, and we were downtown in Columbus at the time, just kind of checking out the shops, and we kept walking and kept walking, and the next thing you knew, we were right in the middle of a parade, and we didn't know what type of parade it was. And as we got deeper into the parade, we were like, oh, okay, so it's a gay pride parade. And and the thing that was just like really trippy to me about it that got my attention, excuse me, was the people that you mentioned, the guys that you mentioned, like the guys that were walking around in the thong underwear, and they were ripped and cut up and buff. Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute, that dude looks like a football player.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, he looks like a world-class athlete. Like, what are we doing right now?
Uh-huh.
And so even some of the magazines that are out there, when they show you the gay man, his body is glistening and he's just right. This dude does nothing but go to the gym. He doesn't even have time for anything else. Okay.
Right.
I know that exists, but a lot of our listeners may not realize that gay men struggle with body image issues too. And I think that from the heterosexual standpoint, you still have a lot of guys who are warming up to the idea of body image stuff. Mm-hmm. They're really not there. In fact, you have a lot of straight men who they may be 30 or 40 years old, and their wife or girlfriend is gaining weight, and they're looking at her like, why are you gaining weight? But it's like, dude, have you looked at yourself in the mirror lately? Like, so it's just like, hey, come on. But, I guess, as I said before, having, worked in addictions, addictions counselors deal with all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Every walk of life, whether you're talking about the very wealthy, the very poor, black, white, inner cities, rural America. Hey, you know what? Addiction is addiction.
It sure is.
Addiction is addiction. And, most addictions counselors have dealt with addicts who are gay or who are bi or who are questioning, although the general public may not have. So they don't know, that in some cases being gay can actually increase the harm of the addict. And so I wanted to kind of have a conversation with you about this, because a lot of times you may have a gay man who he may not be out. Mm-hmm. He may be struggling with identity issues as of yet, but he'll also be struggling with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
How do these two things collide and make it worse for him?
Well, I think I would say, in terms of making it worse, I think it's just a slippery slope when it comes to being a gay man in the community, because the only safe spaces that we really have are bars and clubs.
Gotcha.
And so, and even in the last 2 or 3 years, those spaces haven't been safe when coming to shooting and violence and things like that.
Yes.
And so what happens is you only have this one safe space to go to, and that is a bar. And so then, you're there for 3 or 4 hours because you want to make connections with people. You want to talk to people. You want to be around other people like you, because in your everyday life, you're probably in a homophobic job that is not allowing you to be who you are openly. And so you're at this place and you're drinking for 3 to 4 hours, and then you may get connected with people who are already struggling with some sort of substance abuse, addiction. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's just a slippery slope when you get into those environments, and then, you're at a space where you're maybe not feeling accepted. You're feeling, maybe you're in the closet, and that can be, in a sense, you're in a closet. It's a dark space. You're feeling alone.
Yes.
And so, you know, I don't work specifically with addiction, but I do see a lot of clients who come out of programs.
Right.
And so I see how the two intersect quite a bit because I think it's just, as anyone who struggles with addiction, it's a place they're trying to escape something.
Right.
And so as a gay man, you want to escape being a gay man as much as possible when you don't feel accepted and loved.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's heavy, man. And I mean, I didn't even think about that from the, you know, that perspective of, hey, guess what? I don't have anywhere really to go except for bars and clubs. And man, can you imagine? I mean, you're right. It's nothing to do but drink.
Drink for 3 to 4 hours. And then if you're sitting there without a drink, and it's like, why aren't you drinking?
Right.
And so even me, like with, I have a boyfriend, I've been together 3 years in July. And then when I go out, I'm just kind of a heavy drinker. And so people are like, why aren't you drinking? And I'm like, I don't want to.
Right. Yeah. No, that's
so.
Wow.
You know, people who maybe don't feel as confident, or who are looking to be accepted, or want to, you know, fit in, like as everyone else goes through that situation.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that's just, you find yourself at the bar 3 to 4 days a week. You're drinking 3 to 4 hours each day. And then so it just kind of snowballs. And I see why there's such a high number of gay men who also struggle with substance abuse.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting. And you know, we may have to have you back on to talk about that a little more, because that's just like, that's that's a big deal. Like, that's got me.
Yeah.
You know, there are countless ways for straight men to meet potential partners and spouses. You know, they're not confined to bars and to clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that if we were talking about single people, although this isn't something like you're struggling with being single, you're not going to find a diagnosis for that in the DSM, but it does present psychological challenges if you're talking about loneliness and mm-hmm. and wanting to be loved and things like that. I think that there are a lot more avenues that exist for straight men to meet people, and so it may not have as much of a negative impact on their psyche. But it sounds like to me this is more of a problem for gay men. And so my question to you, just finding mates in terms of finding connections, do you ever have clients that are talking about the psychological difficulty of that because they're gay?
Definitely. I think even because since gay men, it can be a struggle in their environment, because as adults, you know, we usually find the people we connect with either at work or maybe in organizations that we're in or events that we go to. And so sometimes when we're straight world, it can be hard to know, okay, who is that guy gay? Is he open to dating? And so a lot of times it's more put onto these dating apps,
right,
where people are looking to find dates and a significant other to move forward in their life. And so then that also brings back that body image thing, because you have people on there who have the six packs and the muscles, and maybe you're getting rude messages, because there's this epidemic in the gay community about masculine being kind of glorified, feminine being put down or shamed upon, even like no fats, no femmes. It's this glory of being muscular and being masculine. And so if you don't fit that certain stereotype, or you don't fit that box, then dating can be that much harder for you to find someone that's not looking just at a six pack.
Right. So even in the gay community, what you're saying is that this hyper masculine idea is what people really want to see.
Definitely. Even like the idea of trade. So trade is kind of like this can be seen as a guy who maybe doesn't quote unquote look gay, or quote unquote act gay. And so it's like almost like, ooh, so this guy is like a trophy, or he doesn't act a certain way. And so that is glorified in our community a lot of times. And the people who maybe act a certain way, maybe act more feminine talk more feminine if they don't talk a certain way. It's put down and shamed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's that just another hurdle for people to jump over to find people to make a connection, to have a real chance at finding love. It can be very difficult.
So, you know, validation is a hot topic today. Everybody's talking about validation, the good and the bad.
It's important.
So would you say that this is magnified for gay men? And if so, what are some of your messages to gay men who may be experiencing self-loathing or who are engaging in unhealthy habits because they're looking for external validation?
I think it's definitely different for the gay man. I think I was lucky to have a clinical supervisor in my professional journey. We would talk about that, you know, openly up to different topics. We talked about validation, how it's important for different groups of people. And she would talk about her experience as growing up as a woman. And then I would talk about my experience growing up as a gay man, of what that validation does for you, what it looks like not to get that validation, and what are the impacts we have seen in clients who maybe have not got that validation early on in their life, and what that does to them and what they end up doing in their life trying to get that validation from other people. And so that may look like taking, being in relationships where they're not being treated well, whether they are allowing people to break all sorts of boundaries,
right?
Whether they just don't realize the lengths that they're going to keep these people in their life to get some level of validation from them. But also from my own experience, knowing, like with me coming out and my father validating me and me being proud, him being proud of me, I know propelled my journey into being proud of my identity. And so for me to experience that, but also seeing clients where their father did not validate them, just the hurt that kind of digs to the core of them, that they have to walk around with that hurt and invalidation from the person that's supposed to be the closest to them and the person that has the strongest attachment. And so that attachment, the whole attachment theory. But so then for that to be broken, then it causes so much hurt in them that they have to walk around with in everyday life.
You know, and it's funny that you talked about you coming out and speaking with your father about that. I think maybe about 3 weeks ago, somewhere like that, there was a podcast where I did just a solo cast, just me talking about a shift that I've experienced over the last maybe 2 to 3 years. And a friend of mine asked me, well, have you given any thought to any of your children being gay? And how would you deal with that, right? And I took a moment and then I said, you know what? I would love them. I would love the person that they were with because that's someone's child. All right. And that's it. Right. And, you know, I've had a religious perspective that that isn't in line with, you know, with the gay perspective. At the same time, I also am able to compartmentalize different aspects of life. And I understand that the world is not the religious utopia that that I or anyone else thinks that it is. And then beyond that, I'm like, well, wait a minute, this is my kid. Like,
right.
You know, if my child comes to me and says something to me about being gay, you know, I'm not getting ready to go get a religious book and talk about the shoulds and the should nots and the don'ts and the do's. Like, this is a time to show love that I've always shown to my child. Mm-hmm. This is my child taking the opportunity to bear their soul to me and saying, hey, Dad, this is who I am. Please still love me. And, you know, just I can tell you, I meet people all the time who are struggling to be loved. If it's one thing that humanity has in common is we all want to be loved.
Definitely.
And the other thing that a lot of us have in common is none of us really want to be hated.
Right.
No one wants to walk around and be hated. And a lot of people, if you're thinking in terms of addiction, I had a young man who finally decided to go into residential treatment after his parents finally showed him that they cared. Mm. Right. It didn't matter that everybody else around him was saying, hey, man, you need to get some help. Dude, I really am scared for you. No, I think you're making a bad decision. He would just throw those people away. Their advice didn't matter. When his family, when his mom and his dad finally opened up their heart, even as much as their heart was hurting, that was what was needed to get their son to go to a residential treatment facility.
Yeah.
You see? And, you know, he'll always be a recovering addict. He'll always have his different things that he struggles with, but he'll always be their son. And that's really what he wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, and I'm not equating being gay with being an addict. I'm just talking about the validation piece of it, is that it's extremely important when we have the opportunity to show that we care about a loved one, and that we're there for them, that we use that that opportunity to really, really make a connection to the individual in our lives. And a lot of people struggle with that,
yeah.
You know, and I understand that. You know, you talked about in the gay community, this idea of being, you know, too gay or not gay enough, and then kind of like what certain guys are looking for. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you before I ask you the last two or three questions, one of the things I wanted to ask you as a heterosexual male, Justin, is what is something that heterosexual men can do in relation to gay men to foster better relationships? Because I think that we're here, and some of you guys who may just listen to the podcast, you don't see this, but of course, you know, we're two African-American males, and there's this thought pattern that exists among some African-American males that Black gay men are ruining the community. And then as we look beyond that, I still think that there are a lot of heterosexual males who may not know how to foster good relationships with gay men. And to me, that presents one of those cultural mental well-being issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how would you address that?
Well, I think that kind of plays into that toxic idea of masculinity. And so thinking masculinity has to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so I think just fostering relationships, I think a lot of times men aren't taught how to have relationships with other men, because usually that only happens in sports in our lives.
Right.
I mean, really, and you think about middle school and high school, you only around other men and you exchange information, communicate and build relationships off of sports. So then you get out of school and you're in the real world and you're working in your job. Then so you maybe have not had the opportunity to really figure out how to build relationships with men. Mm-hmm. And so you already had a deficit there. And then you're trying to build a relationship with somebody who's different from you.
Yes.
And then what images, what messages have you received about gay men, gay Black men? And so you have to be aware of those messages. You know, as therapists, you know, we're like hyper aware of our thoughts and helping other people to be more aware. So I think that's an important step of being aware of, you know, what are you thinking about gay Black men? Because if you have these negative thoughts, then that's going to hinder you in making a connection with a gay Black man to have an amazing friendship. That could be beneficial for both of you to have a friendship and connection with someone maybe at your job, someone at the gym you play sports with. And so I think that's an important step of being aware of kind of your thoughts about the gay men in your life.
You know, one of the other questions that I wanted to ask you about, and it's huge implications. We know that right now, a lot of people are talking about the implications of race on mental well-being. When you see an individual killed by the police and the actions or the occurrences look kind of questionable, right? There's no weapon. Somebody's back is faced to the police, or I even, you know, a friend of mine who is deaf, you know, she told me there was a Black man who was shot and killed, and as it turns out, he was deaf. So, you know, he's like a triple minority.
Wow,
yeah. Now. So there's a lot of stuff going on with race and mental health, mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the gay community and race and its relation to mental well-being. Are you finding that there is a similar bit of angst when it comes to therapy, racial sensitivity, and being gay? Are you seeing that at all?
I think I see it for me because of my own intersections of my identity that is very present in my work, my clinical work. With clients. And so I'm aware of my experience. And so I'm aware of what my clients could be going through as well. Okay. And so that can lead me in session with clients and the things that I might explore with them. But so what I see the most with that intersection of being a gay Black man is just, I think, really the stigma that goes with it. I see so much of the stigma. So it runs so deep. I feel like we have to work that much harder. And that's why I work with certain organizations in Houston, Melanin and Mental Health, to try to really break that stigma around mental health. Right. Because, I mean, we got to get them in the door first.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You're right about that.
We got to get them in the session. We got to get them in the room to even start the process of working on issues.
Yeah.
I think is what I see the most and kind of where my focus goes so much right now is trying to break that stigma. Let's have those conversations. Let's open the lid on things. Let's go there. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to talk about that today. You can talk about that in therapy. Okay, it's not just about me. That the idea that I'm crazy. It's the fact that, okay, maybe you're trying to find someone to love you. And what does that mean? And how do you love yourself?
Yes.
And how will that make you healthier for somebody else today in the future?
I hear you. So one of the last questions I have for you, and this is something that is, it's very near and dear to me. I've worked with juvenile sex offenders. I've also worked with victims of sexual abuse and rape. But I'm also, I don't like to say I'm a survivor of molestation. I just, that whole thing just kind of, so I'm a survivor. Well, you know what? As long as we're all alive, we're probably surviving something. But, you know, so I was a victim and one of the unfortunate victims of molestation. As a child. And one of the things that used to often be said to me when I would tell somebody that was, they would say, well, do guys that happens to, do they go on to become molesters? Do they do this to someone else? Or that's the line, right? And then beyond that, the next thing it kind of follows a line. The next thing is that a lot of gay men have been abused. And then that's why they're gay.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's definitely a myth that is perpetuated in society a lot of why this reason why that people are the way they are. That's why they're gay. And that's just that goes along the lines of people just trying to put people in boxes and figure out people's whys. You have to separate from that, honestly. Because you have people who have experienced that who are gay, people who have experienced that who are not gay.
That's right.
And so you kind of have to just start, once you start to talk to people, then you really get into people's experiences. And that just helps so much to really, really start talking to people and not just he said, she said, and kind of society standards of what's put out there in the media that you may come across.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's very important that you said something about the media. I'm a huge fan of kind of setting aside the hot button media topics for a minute. It's very unfortunate that we can't just deal with, you know, the person as a person. You talked about putting people in boxes. And today I speak a lot about kicking boxes, crushing boxes. And I realize that it's very scary for individuals. It's very scary to be around an individual who says, you know what, I don't want to be in that box anymore. I'm not living life like that. But it is completely liberating.
But that can be hard for people because it's like, okay, if you're getting rid of your box, does that mean I have to get rid of my box too? Like, how dare you live liberated and free and just do what you want and live a liberated life? Because then it's like, well, I chose the last 40 years to live in this box. So now you telling me at 20, you're going to go outside this box and ignore it?
Right.
That ain't fair.
And it's again, like I said, in that solo cast, I talked about this. I talked about how certain religious perspectives that I had for a long period of time, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm not really connecting to that right now. Or, you know what? This worked unto a point, but now this is working better. Mm-hmm. Or I've left that for something else. Or, you know, yeah. I don't really. And people will go, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, wait a minute. Like, you can't do that. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I can. But if you want to keep doing what you're doing, that's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just that way, man. But Justin, so I know you're in Houston and you have your practice out there. If guys want to reach out to you and if they have questions, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, the website is thequeercenter.com. And then all my social media is thequeercenter. And then my email is justin@thequeercenter.com. Mm-hmm. And so I have contact forms on the website through email. My phone number is on there. I am accepting new clients in Houston. Mm-hmm. I also do training for mental health professionals. I'm actually going to Alabama in July to talk at a mental health symposium for minority health and social justice. And so that's an important work that I do to help other counselors really increase their competency to work with this population, because I can't see everybody. I can't. And I'd like that other people have specialties that can benefit the community. I've met with other counselors who specialize in eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And so for them to have their specialty, but also have that knowledge and awareness of the gay community, then if I have a client who is struggling with that area, I feel more comfortable referring them to that counselor.
Right.
And so that is an important work that I like to do as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, guys. So you can get in touch with Justin at www.thequeercenter.com. You can also look him up on Instagram and Facebook. He is there and he's in the Houston area. And he's really, really just trying to provide men with a safe space, as the Barbershop Group is also trying to provide men with a safe space to explore our minds. We know that there's a lot of stuff that we go through and we don't always talk about. So, Justin, we want to thank you for being on today with us. Guys, if you liked what you heard today, or you have other questions and you would like to support the Barbershop Group, you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. You can also go to www.thebarbershopgroup.org and see what we have going on in the news there. And if you would like to become a patron, you can visit us at www.patreon.com/thebarbershop to make /thebarbershopgroup to make a contribution to us. It'd be greatly appreciated. So with that, guys, we thank Justin again for being on the show, and we will talk to you soon.
Barbershop Group provides safe spaces for men to discuss issues of well-being and mental health. The Barbershop Group also serves as a resource to the community, providing consultations and public speakers through partnerships with attorneys, mental health professionals, family agencies, religious institutions, and other advocates. In the near future, the Barbershop Group seeks to renovate dilapidated residential and commercial properties in urban areas to create respite shelters for displaced men. We will also host mentorship retreats and workshops for young men and adults to foster growth through our Iron Sharpening Iron and our Rebuilding Men programs. In addition, we host a weekly podcast covering issues of mental health, homelessness, financial literacy, education, and leadership. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please email us at info@thebarbershopgroup.org, visit our Facebook page, or call 313-585-9948 for more information.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.